There are nights, every now and then, when the dark passenger really must get out to play. It's like walking a dog. You can ignore the barking and scratching at the door for only so long, and then you must take the beast outside. Not too long after Detective Laguardo's funeral, there came a time when it seemed reasonable to listen to the whispers from the back seat and start to plan a small adventure. I had located a perfect playmate, a very plausible real estate salesman named McGregor. He was a happy, cheerful man who loved selling houses to families with children, especially young boys. McGregor was extremely fond of boys between the ages of 5 and 7. He had been lethally fond of 5 that I was sure of, and quite likely several more. He was clever and careful, and without a visit from Dark Scout Dexter, he would probably stay lucky for a long time. It's hard to blame the police, at least this one's. After all, when a young child goes missing, very few people would say, "Aha! Who sold his family their house?" But of course, very few people are Dexter. This is generally a good thing, but in this case, it came in handy to be me. 4 months after reading a story in the paper about a missing boy, I read a similar story. The boys were the same age. Details like that always ring a small bell and send a Mr. Rogers whisper trickling through my brain. "Hello, neighbor." And so I dug up the first story and compared. I noticed that in both cases, the paper milked the grief of the families by mentioning that they had recently moved into new homes. I heard a small chuckle from the shadows, and I looked a little closer. It really was quite subtle. Detective Dexter had to dig quite a bit, because at first, there didn't seem to be any connection. The families in question were in different neighborhoods, which ruled out a great many possibilities. They went to different churches, different schools, and used different moving companies. But when the dark passenger laughs, somebody is usually doing something funny. And I finally found the connection. Both houses had been listed with the same real estate agency, a small outfit in South Miami, with only one agent, a cheerful and friendly man named Randy McGregor. I dug a little more. McGregor was divorced and lived alone in a small concrete block house off Old Cutler Road in South Miami. He kept a 26-foot cabin cruiser at Matheson Hammock Marina, which was relatively close to his house. The boat would also be an extremely convenient playpen, a way to get his little chums off alone on the bounding main, where he would not be seen or heard while he explored a real Columbus of pain. And for that matter, it would provide a splendid way to dispose of the messy leftovers. Just a few miles out from Miami, the Gulf Stream provided a nearly bottomless dumping ground. No wonder the boys' bodies were never found. The technique made such good sense that I wondered why I hadn't thought of it. To recycle my own leftovers. Silly me. I only use my little boat for fishing and riding around the bay. And here, MacGregor had come up with a whole new way to enjoy an evening on the water. It was a very neat idea, and it instantly moved MacGregor right to the top of my list. Call me unreasonable, even illogical, since I generally have very little use for humans. But for some reason, I care about kids. And when I find someone who preys on children, it is very much as if they have slipped the dark matrix of the $20 to move to the front of the line. I would happily unclip the velvet rope and bring MacGregor right in, assuming he was doing what it looked like he was doing. Of course, I had to be absolutely certain. I had always tried to avoid slicing up the wrong person, and it would be a shame to start now, even with a real estate salesman. It occurred to me that the best way to make sure would be to visit the boat in question. Happily for me, the very next day it was raining, as it generally rains every day in July. But this had the look of an all-day storm, which made it just what Dexter ordered. I left my job at the Miami-Dade Police Forensics Lab early and cut over to Lejeune, taking it all the way to Old Cutler Road. I turned left into Matheson Hammock. As I'd hoped, it seemed deserted. But about 100 yards ahead, I knew there was a guard booth where someone would be waiting eagerly to take $4 from me for a great privilege of entering the park. It seemed like a good idea not to make an appearance at the guard booth. Of course, saving the $4 was very important, but even more so was that on a rainy day in the middle of the week, I might be just a little bit conspicuous, which is something I'd like to avoid, particularly in the course of my hobby. On the left side of the road was a small parking lot that served the picnic area. An old coral rock picnic shelter stood beside a lake on the right. I parked my car and pulled on a bright yellow foul weather jacket. It made me feel very nautical, just the thing to wear for breaking into a homicidal pedophile's boat. And it also made me highly visible. But I was not terribly worried about that. I would take the bicycle path that ran parallel to the road. It was screened in by mangroves, and in the unlikely event that the guard stuck his head out of the booth and into the rain, he would see nothing but a bright yellow blur jogging by. And just a determined runner out for his afternoon trot. Come rain or shine. And trot I did, moving about a quarter of a mile down the path. As I had hoped, there was no sign of life at the guard booth, and I jogged to the large parking lot by the water. The last row of docks off to the right was home to a cluster of boats slightly smaller than the big sports fishermen and millionaire's toys tied up closer to the road. MacGregor's modest 26-footer, the Osprey, was near the end. The marina was deserted, and I went blithely through the gate in the chain-link fence, past a sign that said, "Only boat owners permitted on docks." I tried to feel guilty about violating such an important command, but it was beyond me. The lower half of the sign said, "No fishing off docks or in a marina area." and I prompted myself that I would avoid fishing at all costs, which made me feel better about breaking the other rule. The osprey was 5 or 6 years old and showed only a few signs of wear from the Florida weather. The deck and rails were scrubbed clean, and I was careful not to leave scuff marks as I climbed aboard. For some reason, the locks on boats are never very complicated. Perhaps sailors are more honest than landlubbers. In any case, it took only a few seconds for me to pick the lock and slip inside the osprey. The cabin did not have the musty smell of baked mildew that so many boats get when they are sealed up even for a few hours on the subtropical sun. Instead, there was a faint tang of pine sol in the air, as though someone had scrubbed so thoroughly that no germs or odors could hope to survive. There was a small table, a galley, and one of those little TV VCR units on a railed shelf with a stack of movies beside it. Spider-Man, Brother Bear, Finding Nemo. I wondered how many boys McGregor had sent over the side to find Nemo. I dearly hoped that soon Nemo would find him. I stepped to the galley area and began to open drawers. One was filled with candy, the next with plastic action figures, and the third was absolutely crammed with rolls of duct tape. Duct tape is a wonderful thing, and as I know very well, it can be used for many remarkable and useful things. But I did think that having 10 rolls of it stuffed in a drawer on your boat was a bit excessive. Unless, of course, you were using it for some specific purpose that required a great deal of it. Perhaps a science project involving multiple young boys? Just a hunch, of course. Based on the way I use it, not on young boys, of course, but on the upstanding citizens like, for instance, McGregor. His guilt had started to seem very likely, and the dark passenger flicked his dry lizard tongue with anticipation. I went down the steps into the small forward area the salesman probably called the stateroom. It wasn't a terribly elegant bed, just a thin foam rubber pad on a raised shelf. I touched the mattress and it crackled under the fabric, a rubber casing. I rolled the mattress to one side. There were 4 ring bolts screwed into the shelf, one on each corner. I lifted the hatch beneath the mattress. One might reasonably expect to find a certain amount of chain on a boat, but the accompanying handcuffs did not strike me as being quite so nautical. Of course, there might be a very good explanation. It was possible that McGregor used them on quarrelsome fish. Under the chain and handcuffs, there were 5 anchors. That could very well be a good idea on a yacht that was meant to cruise around the world, but it seemed a bit much for a small weekend boat. What on earth could they be for? If I was taking my little boat out into the deep water with a series of small bodies I wished to dispose of cleanly and completely, what would I do with so many anchors? And of course, when you put it that way, it seemed obvious that the next time McGregor went cruising with a little friend, he would come back with only 4 anchors under the bunk. I was certainly gathering enough small details to make a very interesting picture. Still life without children. But so far, I had not found anything that could not be explained away as massive coincidence, and I needed to be absolutely sure. I had to have one overwhelmingly conclusive piece of evidence, something so completely unambiguous that it would satisfy the Harry Code. I found it in a drawer to the right of the bunk. There were three small drawers built into the bulkhead of the boat. The interior of the bottom one seemed to be a few inches shorter than the other two. It was possible that it was supposed to be, that it was shortened by the curve of the hull. But I have studied humans for many years now, and this has made me deeply suspicious. I pulled the drawer all the way out, and sure enough, there was a small secret compartment on the back end of the drawer. And inside the secret compartment, since I am not actually a real human being, my emotional responses are generally limited to what I have learned to fake. So I did not feel shock, outrage, anger, or even bitter resolve. They're very difficult emotions to do convincingly, and there was no audience to do them for. So why bother? But I did feel a slow, cold wind from the dark back seat sweep up my spine and blow dry leaves over the floor of my lizard brain. I could identify 5 different naked boys in the stack of photographs, arranged in a variety of poses, as if McGregor was still searching for a defining style. And yes, indeed, he really was a spendthrift with his duct tape. In one of the pictures, the boy looked like he was in a silver-gray cocoon, with only certain areas exposed. What McGregor left exposed told me a great deal about him. As I had suspected, he was not the kind of man most parents would wish for a scoutmaster. The photos were good quality, taken from many different angles. One series in particular stood out. A pale, flabby, naked man in a black hood stood beside the tightly taped boy, almost like a trophy shot. From the shape and coloring of the body, I was quite sure the man was McGregor, even though the hood covered his face. And as I flipped through the pictures, I had 2 very interesting thoughts. The first was, aha! Meaning, of course, there was absolutely no doubt about what McGregor had been doing. And he was now the lucky grand prize winner in the Dark Passengers Clearinghouse sweepstakes. And the second thought, somewhat more troubling, was this. Who was taking the pictures? There were too many different angles for the pictures to have been taken automatically. And as I flipped through them a second time, I noticed, in 2 shots that had been snapped from above, the pointy toe of what looked like a red cowboy boot. McGregor had an accomplice. The word sounded so very court TV. But there it was, and I could not think of a better way to say it. He had not done all this alone. Someone had gone along, and if nothing else, had watched and taken pictures. I blush to admit that I have some modest knowledge and talent in the area of semi-regular mayhem. But I had never before run into anything like this. Trophy shots? Yes. After all, I had my little box of slides, each with single drop of blood on them to commemorate every one of my adventures. Perfectly normal to keep some kind of souvenir. But to have a second person present, watching and taking pictures, turned a very private act into a kind of performance. It was absolutely indecent. The man was a pervert. If only I had been capable of moral outrage, I am quite sure I would have been full of it. As it was, though, I found myself more eager than ever to get viscerally acquainted with MacGregor. It was stiflingly hot on the boat, and my wonderfully chick-foul weather suit was not helping. I felt like a bright yellow tea bag. I picked several of the clearest pictures and put them in my pocket. I returned the rest to their compartment, tidied the bunk, and went back up into the main cabin. As far as I could tell from peeking out the window, or did I have to call it a porthole, there was no one lurking about and observing me in a furtive manner. I slipped out the door, making sure it locked behind me, and strolled off through the rain. From the many movies I have seen over the years, I knew very well that rocking in the rain is the correct setting for reflecting on human perfidy, and so I did just that. Oh, that wicked MacGregor and his shutterbug friend. How could they be such vile wretches? That sounded about right, and it was all I could come up with. I hoped it was enough to satisfy the formula, because it was far more fun to reflect on my own perfidy and how I might feed it by arranging a playdate with MacGregor. I could feel a rising tide of dark delight flooding in from the deepest dungeons of Castle Dexter, and building up at the spillways, and soon it would pour out on MacGregor. There was no longer any room for doubt, of course. Harry himself would acknowledge that the photographs were more than enough proof, and an eager chuckle from the dark back seat sanctified the project. MacGregor and I would go exploring together. And then the special bonus of finding his friend in the cowboy boots. We would have to follow MacGregor as soon as possible, of course. No rest for the wicked. It was like a two for the price of one sale. Absolutely irresistible. Filled with my happy thoughts, I didn't even notice the rain as I strode manfully and rapidly back to my car. I had a great deal to do.